Part 7. Getting on a flight. Now that you're armed with a few strategies and a bit more knowledge, we need to address our thoughts to the actual business of flying. As I have said, for many fearful flyers, the problems don't start when they're getting on the aeroplane. They don't start on arriving at the airport. The feelings of anxiety often start at the very thought of having to fly at all, and not just weeks or months either. Anxious flyers can begin to worry about their forthcoming flight as much as 2 or 3 years ahead of the actual flight itself. The wedding and honeymoon plans of a couple are often influenced by the fear of flying. It's not unusual to hear of a honeymoon being cancelled because one of the couple couldn't actually face the flight. When friends travel together, it's not unusual for me to hear that one has had to stay behind and suffer terrible feelings of guilt for spoiling the holiday of other people. One couple I met lived in harmony for over 20 years because one wanted to travel but couldn't because of a fear of flying, and the other wasn't interested in travel at all and was happy to stay at home. The outcome of one of them overcoming their fear was that the couple eventually separated. I mention that only because the effect of a fear of flying on people's lives is considerable. Don't underestimate its effects, but don't feel guilty about it. If I were to pick out one feature that strikes me as being particularly sad, it's the guilt that fearful flyers suffer because of the effect it has on other people's lives. So many people write to me and say that they need help because every year they spoil the family holiday. For many of you, I know that getting on a flight to your holiday destination may seem to others as if you've overcome your fear, but for you, the thought of the return flight spoils the holiday. You should not, of course, feel guilty or responsible for the happiness of others. However, you should understand the effects and outcomes of your behaviour and how it might influence the behaviour of your children towards flying. Extraordinarily, some people gain an advantage from the attention they receive when advertising their fears. These are called secondary gains, and when the fear is acute, it can, as one person said to me, define both their life and their personality. For people like this, the solution is even worse than the fear. However, I digress. I was going to talk about the actual business of flying. Now that we've been flying for over 100 years, I think we can dispense with the remark, the miracle of flight. It's not a miracle. It's a fact of physics, mathematics, science, and engineering, and that is that. No one helps the cause of anxious flyers when we marvel at what aeroplanes do. Certainly, we should marvel at how they can enhance our lives, wonder at the amazing views they give us, be grateful when they bring loved ones together. I suppose we could be generous and marvel in the fact that we can build such devices at all. But they are still a matter of physics, mathematics, science, and engineering. There is not a miracle to be seen anywhere. And neither do aeroplanes defy the laws of gravity. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a law. It would be a scientific oddity that is true one day and untrue another. Aeroplanes fly because they have wings. An aeroplane doesn't care how heavy it is, as long as its wings can make enough lift to support it. The comparison that I like most of all is that a brick is lighter than a jumbo jet, but doesn't fly nearly so well. If you don't believe me, get hold of a brick, throw it, and ask yourself why it didn't fly. It didn't fly because it hasn't got wings. Put wings of the right shape and size on it, and you could throw it, and it would fly. Sure, it wouldn't stay airborne until it had an engine fitted, but then neither does a glider. But we would agree that a glider flies. And if you wonder how a helicopter flies, well, that has rotating wings. Balloons? They don't really fly any more than a dandelion seed being blown along by the wind. But as long as something is up in the sky and moving, most people call it flying. In fact, balloons float in the air like a submarine floats in water. Anyway, if a brick has wings and an engine, it's an aeroplane. If it's big enough to carry a pilot and passengers, it's still an aeroplane, even though it looks like a brick with wings and an engine. The problem is persuading people that flying is normal. But unfortunately, any question about flying machines usually starts with the question, how? Which implies doubt. We often say, how on earth? Meaning, I don't really believe it. I would rather ask the question, why does an aeroplane fly? That sounds factual, and flying is factual. Okay? Why does an aeroplane fly? An aeroplane flies because when it travels through the air, a suction develops on the top of the wing that is sufficient to hold it up. But not only is there suction on the top of the wing, the shape of the wing causes an enormous cushion of air underneath it, which helps to support the aeroplane too. And if you don't believe that, ask yourself how a hydrofoil on a boat works. And isn't it a coincidence that a wing shape is called an aerofoil? Aero meaning air, and hydro meaning liquid. Why are we more convinced that a hydrofoil works without questioning it, but believe that an aerofoil, wing, needs magic or blind faith? I'll tell you the reason, and that's because seeing is believing. You can see the water, but you can't see the air, and that's the problem. However, if I were to push your head out of an aeroplane doing 600 miles an hour, you'd soon find out that air can be thicker than water. But you know this already because every one of us has felt the force of the air when we've stuck our arms or heads out of a car or train window. And just one more illustration of how powerful the air can be, and that is to ask you to recall any occasion when you've tried to carry a large flat object on a windy day. Or what about carrying an umbrella on a windy day? An aeroplane doesn't need the wind to make it fly. It creates its own wind. And as a pilot, I call it airflow, when the engines pull or push it through the air. So now we know why an aeroplane flies. An aeroplane is controlled by changing the amount of lift on the wings or the tailplane. That's the small wing at the back. The rudder is the bit that sticks up at the back and works in the same way that a keel works on a boat. The speed of an aeroplane is controlled either by pointing the nose up or down, or by changing the power from the engines. That's all there is to it, so let's go flying. I think the easiest way to describe all the things about aeroplanes is to take you through a typical flight from a pilot's point of view and highlight the things of special interest to you as I go along. A typical passenger flight would be like this. As the captain, I'd check in at work an hour or two before departure, depending upon the destination. I meet my fellow crew members and go through a briefing. The cabin crew will brief themselves about their passengers and service and safety features and report to me later. The co-pilot and I will check the facilities en route, the weather, the serviceability and maintenance record of the aircraft we're flying. About 45 minutes before we take off, we'll arrive at the aircraft, and while the cabin crew check the aircraft safety equipment and the catering supplies, I will check the outside of the aircraft. The co-pilot, meanwhile, will be checking and setting the cockpit for the departure. He or she will contact air traffic control for departure clearance, which will give us the routing from the departure airfield to join the main route to our destination. We're not allowed to accept an aircraft for flight unless it conforms with all the maintenance rules. The engineer will certify that the aircraft is serviceable and that the correct amount of fuel has been loaded. This is cross-checked against the request that I have made and the information that the flight dispatcher has for preparing the departure documents. With all these cross-checks, it's impossible to take off without knowing the exact weight of the aircraft with everything and everyone on board. We will always know and always confirm that the runway we intend to use for takeoff is long enough. In reality, not only would it be long enough for us to take off from, it will also be long enough for us to stop on in the unlikely event of any malfunction. Regardless of how you feel the takeoff is going, you can rest assured that all the calculations will have been done to confirm that the takeoff is both legal and, more importantly, safe. When we've completed all our checks of the aircraft, we'll be ready to go, so it's time to start the engines. There are many key moments when the anxiety levels of a fearful flyer increase. Looking at holiday brochures, booking tickets, going to the airport, boarding, and so on. But for many people, it really kicks in when the engines start. This is one of the moments where the decision is being taken out of your hands. After the engines start, you'll feel that it's very difficult to get off. Once again, you'll become hypervigilant. You will notice everything that is happening. It is important at this stage to know what is happening so that you can minimize your anxiety. Remember your breathing, relaxation, and visualization routines. Before we start the engines, we have to turn off the air conditioning so the background noise suddenly disappears, to be immediately replaced with a rumble and then a whine as the engines start. The lights go on and off, pumps begin to run, the air conditioning goes on and off, and all sorts of unusual things happen. Unusual to you. Remind yourself that unusual and unexpected are not the same as dangerous. The reason that the lights go on and off is that electrical services are changed from the ground power to the engines, and there's a moment when the electricity supply is interrupted. That's when the lights go off and then back on. When the aeroplane has its own electrical supply, then all the other bits and pieces can be turned on, and it is these things that cause the noises. Certainly, nothing to be anxious about, and if you expect them, you should be able to deal with your stress levels with your breathing, relaxation and visualization routines. Once the engines are started, the aircraft will be allowed to be pushed into position on the taxiway. During the pushback, you may feel the aircraft being jolted by the tractor. This is all perfectly normal. Once freed from the pushback tractor, the aircraft can taxi to the takeoff point. During this phase, once again, you'll hear unfamiliar noises as the flaps are set for takeoff and as the wheels run over the lights that show the centerline of the taxiway. There may be a queue of aircraft ahead of you, also getting ready to take off. These delays are not because there's something wrong with the aeroplane, or that the runway is too busy, or that air traffic control don't know what's going on, or anything sinister like that. It's just like waiting at the traffic lights. When it's your turn to go, you can go. Before takeoff, use your strategies to stay calm and relaxed. I hope that by this stage of the flight, you'll be busily reading your magazine or book, and you'll be engrossed in it rather than worrying about what's going on around you. Let's take a break here and then talk about the takeoff and the rest of the flight.